Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
So we got a bunch of comments. Like, this last week's episode and the episode before that I looked, and I quote, either baked or blazed. And I was just like, what about me was...
I'm not going to lie. I clicked that timestamp and laughed for a solid 20 seconds because you were pretty fucking zonked. Like, it's...
Well, wasn't that when Reed was talking about Morgan's like Thrasios Timna deck, I think?
Maybe.
And I was like making a weird face, like a...
Yeah, I'm also one of those people though who looks like kind of zonked out when other people are saying something wild. Like I'm always like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't hide it well.
I don't know. I thought that was very funny. But I do, I swear to God, I'm not making this shit up. There's a new entry into the Lime Scooter saga.
Oh my God. All right. Click record.
No, we are recording. We are recording.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's no way.
There's a new entry into the Lime Scooter saga. It's not a Lime Scooter though, this time. It's, I don't remember what the brand was. It's like silver.
Okay, but the different scooter-based issue you're having.
Different scooter-based, but essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
And there were like six of them right in front of the door to our apartment again. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. How does this keep happening?
Okay. And so do you think there's some like scooter bandit who's like, oh, they'll never catch me, I'm gonna get all these scooters?
No, I don't think they're trying to collect them. Right? Because that would be, if they were trying to collect them, I wouldn't be seeing them. Right? Like,
well, it could be their calling card.
Their calling card. So what it actually is the Lime Scooter is like a signifier that right. We need to check and see what's if we yeah. have everything.
Right. It's like, oh man, I lost my wallet 3 days ago, and then your neighbor's like, yeah, me too. And they're like, oh, it's the scooter thief.
it's the scooter bandit. So now it's just the scooter wars. It's
well, you know what happened, right? And that's why one of them tried to run you off the road, right? Because you got too close.
I caught onto the scent. You were getting too close. It's fucking amazing. Oh my God. Welcome to Mind Sculptors. I'm Callahan.
I'm Ian.
And well, boy howdy, we got a rootin' tootin' fastest gun in the West set to talk about today. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's a Southern accent, not a Western accent. I apologize. It's
okay. You tried your best, and that's really what makes it.
Well, I live in the South, so I don't know what to tell you, but but yeah, we're talking about Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Appreciate everybody for tuning in today. If you like this content and other content that we do, leave a like, hit subscribe, comment down below. If you're here just to shit on us again, feel free. We love the engagement. It's awesome. I'm not being sarcastic. It's great. It makes our numbers better. So keep going. Like, yeah, fucking go off thing.
Take a big old poop right on us.
Yeah. Go for it. We're maskless like that. But yeah, so you played at Punt City 3 over the weekend, correct?
I did.
What did you end up playing?
So I brought Tevesh Krom, just missed the winning in on that one. Lost to Wounded Satellite for a mutual winning in, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So he was at 16 points and only one 16 pointer made it, right? So I don't know. Mm-hmm. He would have to have like the best breakers, right?
Right.
But yeah, it was a well fought tournament. I drew three times during a 7-round Swiss, which did not help at all. Yeah, it felt like, I don't know, it was one of those days, you know what I mean, and when you're playing a tournament where like I was really happy with how I was playing and I was happy with, you know, the deck choice to a degree, but it just felt like it was one of those things where I kept like grasping and just missing, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like I mulled to two on round five. I, you know, had obviously the game with Wounded in the last round. I also got, so I was in the heavy draw bracket, right? Because I had three draws by the end of day one, right? So I kept getting paired up every single round too,
oof,
which was like not great, right? So like when I had 7 points, I played two 11s and a 10.
Right.
When I had 8 points, I played two 10s and another 8. Like, you know what I mean? It was one of those games, right? Or right. One of those days, I should say. So it was just like, you know, not to make excuses about it, but it definitely just felt like I really was genuinely happy with how I was playing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I used to watch a lot of like NASCAR, right? Like sometimes like you can be doing everything perfect on the track and sometimes you're just the track doesn't like you.
Yeah.
And
you know what I mean? It's one of those things where like I don't ever want to like push that as a way to like conceptualize these things, right? Like, cause like I was just about to say like round four, I know for a fact I was so exhausted from the first two rounds going to time in a row that I was like just made like very silly mistakes at that last turn of another 80 minute round, right?
Right.
And I was like, it was just pure mental exhaustion, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that, it's like, okay, cool. Like that's definitely one I can chalk up to that was on me. You know what right. I mean? So like definitely don't want to like remove any sort of personal acceptance there. But right. it felt like one of those things where I made one very clear punt the entire tournament and that's what cost me everything because nothing else broke my way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that happens. Like you can't like you're not gonna be perfect all the time, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's
the other thing about it that I think is important to remember. But
yeah.
Good job. How did you like Tevesh Krom?
Tevesh Krom was fine. The weird thing was Krom wasn't triggering, which I thought was really weird.
Interesting.
Like I was going through and I did also end up in multiple double Sisse pods, which I do think have a lot to do with Krom not triggering, you know what I mean?
The deck that just doesn't cast spells.
So that was definitely not my favorite part of that experience. But, you know, all that being said, I think the deck is still very well positioned. I think it just unfortunately fell a little short.
Yeah.
Displacement Wave won me multiple games. For those who don't know that card, it's very, very powerful. I highly suggest playing it in some of your more aggressive decks. It was an all-star, right? Just being able to bounce like every 2-mana stacks piece and also your own mana rocks and then basically have the spell like repay for itself because you picked up all your own rocks and then replayed them, you know, is pretty hot. So definitely big shout out to the card Displacement Wave. But, you know, it was really fascinating. And honestly, we could do an entire episode about this, which I actually do kind of want to talk about on the non-set review.
Yeah.
Episode just about how the whole lying debacle seems to have completely changed the tournament landscape in a really fascinating way. And it wasn't even really my games that I was seeing in as much in this tournament. But when I had like a lot of people like not just one source, but literally multiple people coming and telling me about their games and how that sort of cloud over that tournament was like affecting things. So What do you mean by lying?
When you say lying, was it like people were lying about what they were trying to do or what? Like,
well, like the whole lying in CEDH debate, right? Like the whole that whole thing, right? Like
right.
has like genuinely drastically shifted, I think, a lot of people's political style, which is really fascinating. And as I mentioned, like we could go do a whole episode about this. So I don't want to get too deep in it now.
Yeah. I was just curious, like what you meant by that. So,
I mean, we did have people who I like, you know, respect as players, just like people come up to me and be like, yeah, they straight up lied to my face. And I was like, oh, that's new.
Yeah. Hey, listen, what do the judges say? Your opponents don't have your best interests in mind. All right, let's get into the set review. We've got a handful of cards to talk about today. Before we get into the commanders for the set, I do have one honorable mention that I feel obliged to talk about. And that's because our boy Jace is back in action. It's Jace Reawakened, a planeswalker that cost a blue and a blue. Comes in with three loyalty and says you can't cast the spell during your first, second, or third turns of the game. Has a plus one ability that is draw a card and discard a card, so it loots. Second plus one ability is you may exile a non-land card with mana value three or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. And then a minus six ability until end of turn, whenever you cast a spell, copy it, you may choose new targets for the copy. So a pretty powerful planeswalker. I don't know that it's a CEDH card, but I would be remiss if we did not talk about the channel's namesake when it gets a new card, right?
Oh, like, yeah, I don't think it's seeing any play, but I love that for us.
It is a card that I'm like genuinely excited to see what people do with it in like Pioneer specifically, because it like feels like it has some implications in like Pioneer. So I'll be curious to see how that goes. I know some of the people I've talked to are interested in seeing what this card can do. So we'll see how that goes. But moving on to stuff for Commander. All right. So looking at the commanders we're going to be talking about today, we've got nine different commanders. And the first one on this list is, I really hope I say this correctly, is Tai Joaquin, Perfect Shot. It is a 2/3 human mercenary that costs a red and a white and says whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to a creature equal to that creature's toughness, draw a card. Then it has an activated ability that costs X and you tap it. And it says if a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a permanent or player this turn, it deals that much damage plus X instead. So this is a really interesting card. Actually spent a decent amount of time on Saturday brewing this with Phoenix.
Yeah.
And
I think it's
I was surprised actually how into it I got.
When he first sent me that commander, I was like, no, all right, Phoenix, go back to your crazy hole. Like, cause he does send us a lot of like very whacked out stuff, right?
But he knows that, right? Like sometimes he'll send us stuff that he's just like, oh, this is cooler.
I feel like he like Cobblepot hasn't like passed off this mortal coil, but like, I feel like his spirit has imparted onto Phoenix for sure. I think the
spirit of Cobblepot is with us.
I do genuinely think this commander is really interesting. I think a lot of the lines you can do with it are kind of fascinating. So like on a very base level, right? The thing that like really intrigued me about it was there are some combos and we can talk about those, right? But specifically, one thing that really fascinated me was this idea that you can have these like burn stacks that we've kind of talked about in the show, right? Like your Vengeful Trackers and your Eidolon of the Great Revels, or another card we're going to be talking about later, Mage Bane Lizard. And you can have cards like that, right? And like your opponent could be like, all right, cool, I'm going to like crack five treasures into the Vengeful Tracker, right? And you can always just be like, cool, I'm going to activate my commander and add four more damage to each of those triggers, right? Yep. And it's just like, oh, I just took 24 for trying to crack a Dockside, right? Like, stuff like that is, like, kind of fascinating to me.
It also draws an absurd number of cards. Like, genuinely speaking, we, like, goldfished it, like, for, like, several hours on Saturday. Okay.
Yeah.
And you will average, I want to say, just through, like, goldfishing, right? Like, we were looking at, like, 3 to 5-ish cards just on your turn when you're doing stuff.
Can you kind of go into more detail on that?
So the deck is doing a lot of stuff where it's kind of doing some passive token generation. It's kind of doing some of the paying stuff that we've seen. It's kind of like this amalgamation of like pseudo, what is it? Obnixilis tech in a way.
Okay.
But also is taking advantage of doing things with Indestructible. So mm-hmm. you get to run a bunch of cards that you normally would be like, eh, it's not that interesting or that cool. I have to pull up the exact list, which is like buried in our DMs. But it, the long and the short of it was, is that when we were goldfishing it, I was like genuinely impressed mm-hmm. with how mm-hmm. it played. Like I was actually just like, oh, this has more legs than I was giving it credit for.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that's really cool about it is that it's like technically also an infinite mana outlet, right? Because say you go through the Meticulous Excavation or Cloudstone Curio plus Dockside loops, right? You generate right. infinite treasures. You can then, because your deck is full of these pingers, right? Or whatever sort of, pardon me. because your deck's full of pingers and whatever sort of damage effects that you might have, you're able to then like put, you know, a X equals 100,000 right. version of your commander's ability on the stack and then be like, cool, ping you all once. And everyone's like, wait a minute.
the one thing that I was really, I just sent you the list. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I was like really into with how it played was the way Walking Ballista interacts with this commander is like quite good. it does a lot of good crowd control work. You get to yeah. play shit like Aurelia's Fury and it's like kind of hilariously good because it draws a bunch of cards.
Sorry, the name of the deck is really sending me.
Do you want to share with the class, please?
Yeah, the name of the deck. The name of the deck is Pew Pew Laser Beam Noises. This is so fucking stupid.
It's right up your alley. But yeah, like goldfishing it, we were just kind of like, oh, this is really neat. Card like Kaven, by the way, is just like a free, oh, yeah. which is, we were just kind of like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And so it's shockingly good. I don't know that it's like a meta buster or anything sure, like that, sure. but I think that there is more here than I was really kind of thinking there would be. And so I was 24 lands, by the way, which is just like the Phoenix classic, right? End the festivities, draws a bunch of cards. Like, it's just like weird how many cards this deck draws.
Does Chain of Plasma loot through your entire deck when your commander is indestructible?
Correct.
Or rummage, I guess. But yes, yeah.
You just pick up your deck.
Well, you don't, though, because you have to discard, right?
Yes, but you sculpt your hand effectively.
You sculpt your hand, right. Does that do anything? Do you go into like a breach line at that point? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. You have a breach line. You have Ballista as a payoff. You have, what was the other payoff?
How's Ballista payoff?
You just generate infinite mana and make a big Ballista and good game.
I meant specifically for the Chain of Plasma line, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah. The Chain of Plasma line is literally just so you can like get your deck, right?
Yeah.
You have Aldarin Epicure. That is a way to win because you're able to just kind of like bounce that over and over again.
I'm actually very surprised to not see you guys on the Dockside stuff.
I will be honest. Uh-huh. Most of this brewing was done by Phoenix.
Yeah.
I was playing City Skylines the entire time.
Understood.
So there was a lot of stuff where, you know, like when we brew, I would just be like, is this better than X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
And so that was mostly that. But cards like, you get to play cards like Marrow Shards and Gutshot, baby.
I mean, Gutshot's also like already been kind of fringe playable because turns out when in a Bowmasters format, when that one stupid card is taking over, you're like, yeah, I will happily pay 2 life to make sure that stops being a fucking problem.
Yeah. So like I said, it's surprising. I think it still needs work, obviously. Like I think there's still innovation to be done there, but I think it is a deck that has a lot more legs than I thought it did. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. All about it.
So I know people have been saying I am cynical and I hate everything, but I do like new stuff. I just just have a healthy amount of criticism.
Skepticism. Yeah, we're verging on the healthy amount.
Yeah. Next card on our list is Geralf the Fleshright, which is a human.
Sorry, you said the name wrong.
What?
It's the Fleshlight.
Oh my god, fuck off. Geralf is a human warlock that is a 2/3. I have a bone to pick about their use of warlock in this set, but I will deal with that another time. It's a 2/3 that costs 2 generic and a blue and says whenever you cast a spell during your turn, other than your first spell that turn, create a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature token.
I believe in general, they don't go for the D&D definition of warlock.
I fucking hate it.
Yeah, they go for male witch, I believe.
But they have warlocks that are women, too. So it's like.
What?
Yes. It literally is a just. My understanding of how they have been using it is it is effectively an evil wizard, which I don't love because I'm like a something that people who know me in D&D would know that I fucking love the warlock class. So I'm personally just like, who's their fucking patron, guys? Mm-hmm. But it also has another ability. Whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn.
Yeah.
So this was a card that you requested. Because I am 2018 build and still live in, or my brain just defaults to this anytime I see card. It is technically a payoff for Dramatic Scepter.
Oh yeah, I thought. Sorry, I was thinking 2014.
Oh no. I was 2018 is what I was thinking. But
you know what it is for a good 2014 to 16 card payoff, right? It's refers to a deck you've referred to on this show too many times.
My brain is
high tide. It's a high tide commander.
Well, I guess it is a high tide
commander. It's literally mono blue storm, right? Like you have the payoff in the command zone, right? So this is a quirky one, right? Like, I'm not saying this is going to be an easy one to build, right? So either you need some sort of like massed haste outlet, like, crashing drawbridge or something like that. That's one way to make this deck very effective, right?
Take some turns, baby.
Yeah. Or you can just take an extra turn. That's actually super true. I didn't even think about that. That's so hot. What
blue does really well.
Yeah. No, that's like way better than making bad haste outlets. Right. But like, yeah. I think this is so cool. Right. Like you're like, even if you get like 5 storm on your turn, which in this deck, I would assume the way you build it, that would be bad. Right. But to even get 5 storm. Right. Because like the cool part of this commander and the way it's worded. Right. You can play this spell as your first spell for turn and then just start going, right? Mm-hmm. Like this can be your first spell, which is really, really cool. Yep. So you're like, okay, cool. Let me get commander down. And then I'm like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 spells. Right. And it's like, okay, cool. Now I've got like a 2/2, a 3/3, a 4/4, a 5/5, and a 6/6. Right. Cause it's, you put a counter on it. For
I wish this was a blue black deck so bad.
Oh, it would be much better. Yeah. For
so
sure.
Bad. I want to play classic Dimir Storm.
Right.
So
right.
Bad.
Right. And that's definitely like obviously not what this is, but I still think like the mono blue, like Frantic Search into Snap, into High Tide, into like all of that stuff, into a Time Spiral, like all that stuff builds you super hot army. You get one extra turn, you're doing the thing, right? Is it the best Storm Commander ever? No, but it does really cool stuff. Gets me so excited I slapped my microphone.
you almost slapped your microphone into a better position. You're doing the thing you did last week where you have your microphone way over here and you talk over here and then you'll turn to look and then you're like, hello.
I changed my setup. I'm sorry. But yeah, I just think it's really interesting. It's a really cool commander. I think also like the interesting like kind of the interaction with like Phyrexian and Ashnod's Altar is kind of fun too, right? Just because like, yeah, you don't get the big army, but like it makes your storm plan a lot better too, right? And like, yeah, you can do candelabras, you can do, you know, Aetherflux Reservoir stuff, like just real, you know, dated ways of playing Storm, but like in a really cool, fun way. I'm like all about it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's really cool the way that you kind of put that in. Yeah, I mean, it's mono blue storm, baby. Let's fucking go. The next commander on our list is Laughing Jasper Flint. This is another Phoenix classic. It is a 4/3 lizard rogue that costs a generic, a black, and a red. It says creatures you control but don't own are mercenaries in addition to their other types. Beginning of your upkeep, exile the top X cards of target opponent's library, where X is the number of outlaws you control. Until end of turn, you may cast spells from among those cards, and mana of any type may be spent to cast those spells. So, a lot of text on that card. But effectively, it is a thing where you want to be playing. I guess it's worth noting what rogues or what outlaws are. Outlaws are any creature that is one of these creature types, which is assassin, mercenary, pirate, rogue, and warlock. Again, part of why I really fucking hate the way that you're using warlock is because it's just, it's an evil wizard. And I just, anyway, I will not get mad about this instead of talk about the card. The card's okay. There is some like combo potential, I believe. I don't remember what, but I know that Phoenix has yelled about it in my DMs a bunch. What are your kind of thoughts on this card? Because my personal thought is that it's like perfectly fine. And that if,
yeah, I don't think I know of any combos I see with it per se, right? But like, it just does, it kind of gives me like Florian vibes, right? Where it's yeah, like low to the ground Rakdos card advantage that literally uses exile. And now that I've compared it to Florian, I like this card significantly less because I like Florian a lot better than this card. And Florian's kind of considered a good fringe deck, right? So like,
I don't know. You compared it to Florian and it made me hate the card because I already hate Florian. So
I like Florian and I do not like this card nearly as much as I like Florian. So,
yeah, no, I mean, Phoenix, get in the comments. Tell us what we're missing here. But yeah, it's a thing. Next card is Lazav, Familiar Stranger. It is a lot of Ravnikans on this lane. Lazav is a shapeshifter that is a 1/4 that costs a generic, a blue, and a black, and says whenever you commit a crime, put a +1/+1 counter on Lazav. Then you may exile a card from a graveyard. If a creature card was exiled this way, you may have Lazav become a copy of that card until end of turn. This ability triggers only once each turn. So, again, another commander where new mechanic. What is committing a crime? So committing a crime is whenever you cast a spell, activate an ability, or put a triggered ability on the stack that targets one or more of the following, which is an opponent, a spell, an ability an opponent controls, a permanent an opponent controls, or a card in an opponent's graveyard. So pretty much anytime you interact with an opponent, you are committing a crime, which is, you know, makes total sense, I guess. For all the law bringers of, you know, Azorius, when they're controlling stuff, they are actually committing crimes. So, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, fuck the police, right? But what do you think, Lazav, Ian?
Wow, that was an energy you really just passed that off to me with.
Yeah.
I actually do not know why this card is on the set review. Okay. I think it's pretty trash tier.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. I listen, I threw it on there. You didn't say anything. Listen, I do this thing where I just throw cards on there. Mm-hmm. And if you don't say anything, I'm just like, all right, I guess you want to talk about it.
No, I mean, genuinely, I think it's way too many hoops to go through for a clone. I think we have a lot of really good clones right now. One that we'll even talk about later. But yeah, no, I think this is just it's too many hoops. Like the thing is, you need stuff in your grave, right? If you become a clone of anything, anywhere, all at once, then I think maybe a little more interesting, I guess. Like it's a reanimate in the command zone, technically, right? Which I like. I don't hate as the idea of being like the thing is you don't get ETBs, which sucks a lot, right? And you know, maybe if it like, I would be more interested if it became a clone more, like if it was a clone but retained this ability kind of thing, you know, as opposed to like just clone to the end turn. I do like the idea that you can just be like, all right, Entomb's a one card combo in my deck, right? Plus any piece of interaction ever, right? Like, so I can, you know, Entomb in response to your spell, right? And then still in response, I'm going to Flusterstorm your spell. I've committed a crime. My commander is now a Razaketh. You know what I mean? Right. Like that, that's kind of an interesting interaction. Yeah. And I can kind of get behind that. I think what I sort of just sold myself on the thing that I find fascinating on it a little bit more than I originally had. I just wish, yeah, once again, like it kind of did the graveyard thing a little better. Cause like a lot of the best reanimating stuff right now in the format is like, it's like Razaketh specifically. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is sort of like, yeah, I kind of wish this was other stuff, like it was around longer or that it had an ETB or like any of that stuff, you know? Right.
So. Yeah, no, totally. I share a lot of your same opinions on this card. It is fine. I think that if you want to be building something around this, go for it. Fully encourage it. But I think, you know, and I've said this before with a lot of other cards that we've talked about, where it's like your mileage may vary depending on like what you're going for and what your angles are. And so I think like if you want to brew and explore the format, I think this is an interesting thing to explore. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that you will have a lot of success necessarily. One thing I will say about this is I do think it is interesting on the perspective of, it is a reanimate deck or reanimation deck that gets to play like Grafdigger's Cage because it doesn't really care about putting the cards from your graveyard onto the battlefield. And you think that is the most enticing part about it. I feel
like if you wanted to do that, you play Mimeoplasm though, right?
Yeah, like, you can do that too, right? But I like that is color, the one thing I think is interesting.
Yeah. Oh, you skipped one.
Did I?
I think, yeah.
What? Did you add something?
Yes.
Jesus like Christ.
30 minutes ago.
No, we're not talking about this stupid. This is not a CEDH commander.
Yes, it is.
It's not. This card sucks. This card's bad. It can be cute. It can be cute and bad. That's those two things can't exist together, Ian. I know you and Lua love this fucking card. But I'm telling you, this is not a good card. All right, we're talking about Loot, the Key to Everything. I fucking hate that you're making me talk about this. It is a 1/2 Beast Noble that is a green, blue, and a red. Has Ward 1 and says, at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among other non-land permanents you control. You may play those cards this turn. It's cute.
Okay, no, actually, though, this is the reason I do want to talk about this commander, right? Is because for a pretty minimal investment, right, it gets kind of very strong with cards like the Ninth Doctor and Paradox Haze and stuff like that, right? So, for example, if you're having like double upkeeps and you're able to basically like, for example, if you go like turn one like Chromox into this or whatever, like your turn one Chromox Spirit Guide, get this guy down, right? So that's already two things, right? The next turn you untap, play Paradox Haze, right? That next turn comes around, you have one artifact, one enchantment, it itself is a creature, right? It doesn't say other, no card times among other, other non-land permanents. Okay, that's a little bit worse, I'm not gonna lie. I did not realize it said other. Okay, I still love him. No, I just think like by the time you have some things, you get casually like one or two triggers. I did realize he says other, which makes him a little bit worse, but I wish he would trigger his own creatureness. But you're also in teamer, so it's not exactly hard to like get that. It's just a lot of free value every turn, right? I think that's sort of the big benefit of it. I'm not saying it's absolutely busted. I just think, you know, with it reminds me a lot of Paco and Halden, but just a lot cheaper to invest into, right?
Yeah, but okay. The one thing I will say about Paco and Halden, though, is the thing that Paco and Halden does that I think that makes it good is you don't care about the expensive part of it because it just comes down and immediately puts pressure on the board and immediately puts cards, exile cards, right?
Right, but you have to invest 8 mana into it, right? Like,
sure, yes, but you are getting that immediacy of it. And even if you can't play them, right, like of the four, you have now put a lot of pressure on the board. And I think that part of it is what that I also think. Is
like, as someone who has piloted that in tournaments, it's a major downside of the deck too, right? Like,
sure,
yes, you can put pressure on people's life totals, right? But there are times in which people are just like, oh no, big dog, react strongly, right? And like, that happens a lot when you play that deck. So that's sort of my one of the reasons I found loot interesting is this idea that like, oh well, people do tend to react strongly to Paco and Hald, and here's this teamer card eventually. I'm not saying it's broken, right? Like, I just think it's maybe better than I think at first might appear.
Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. So this next card is also a card that you are really into that I think is fine. And it's called Stella Lee Wildcard.
I think this is the best card in the set.
I don't know that I agree with that, but it is a 2/4 that costs a generic a blue and a red. It is a human rogue. Says whenever you cast your second spell each turn, exile the top card of your library. Till end of your next turn, you may play that card. Also has a tap ability that lets you tap it, copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Activate only if you've cast three or more spells this turn. So this is the best card in the set.
There are at least four with mana value three or less instant kill or instant win conditions with this deck, right?
Okay.
The triggering three times thing, right? So is it Storm, right? Like, which is not hard to do, right? But it's also not Storm, right? It's Storm in the sense that like you want to proc its abilities for three times, right? There are several cards that exist currently that say instance and sorcery specifically that say untap target creature plus get an additional effect, right?
Right.
So the one that's like the easiest to talk about is like Refocus, right? Mm-hmm. One in a blue, untap target creature, draw a card. Cleanest thing, right? You go, all right, cool. Stella's out. Go to my turn. I play a mana rock, play Rite of Flame, play Refocus. I win the game. Because you trigger the second ability, right? You get exile top card. Play Refocus, target your commander. With Refocus on the stack, you tap your commander, make a copy of Refocus. And untap your commander, you draw a card.
Okay.
You go, okay, look, my commander's untapped. I'm going to tap, make copy, refocus, draw a card. I'm going to tap, refocus, draw a card, right? Mm-hmm. You just draw through your entire deck by casting three spells in an Izzet commander, which is super lean to love the ground. Cerulean Wisps is another functional copy of this card. Twitch is another functional copy of this card. There's also a threaten effect that came out in Wilds of Eldraine that untaps a creature, puts a Wicked Roll token on, which Wicked Rolls, you can only have one roll token on your commander. When Wicked Roll falls off, it deals one damage to your opponent. So you put a token, you put the roll token on them, you do it again, untaps them, puts the roll token on. Oh, okay.
Sure, it fell off.
Does one damage to everybody, infinite damage, right?
Okay.
There's also a bunch of bad versions of it, right, that cost 4 and 5 mana that, like, you don't have to play in a very efficient version of this deck, and they still are there and exist, right? The other part of this is that, like, that investment that I just talked about is all a bunch of cards you're playing anyways, right? You're playing Rite of Flames, you're playing Chrome Moxes, you're playing Mana Crypts, you're playing all of these cards anyways, right? It's super easy to get to the trigger this being your third spell per turn. Mm-hmm. I was goldfishing this deck, forgot about the line of text where it gives you an extra card if you hit two spells, and still was goldfishing turn two to turn three wins this
deck. Interesting. Okay.
It is very efficient. It is very powerful. I'm going to make a whole video about this, but it is the fastest
gun in the West.
True. it is probably the best precon to ever come out, as far as I have to buy these very cheap cards and then have a CEDH playable deck. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, as soon as you get the fast mana and like maybe $50 worth of cards, this is a CEDH deck.
Period, yeah. OK. Right? Yeah, I see. I see where you're coming from.
That is huge for the format. I think it's going to get a lot of players into CEDH. It's also like
this feels like as an intro deck, a more accessible deck than something like Kinnan, personally.
Because
like, Kinnan is just like, here's all these intricacies that you need to figure out, and this deck's just like cast spells.
And like the backup plan, the quote bad plan, is what Izzet has been doing for a long time, which is just like playing Breach Lines, right? Like, which this helps, right? Like, double, you know, tutoring for any sort of instances of sorceries is like really, really nice, right? Like, going through your library and searching and like playing a bunch of these cards, there's so much layering and redundancy in here that it's like, it's so clean. And I don't know that we've discovered the best version of it yet. Josh Miller Drunken Highlander sent me his version of the deck. He's very excited about it. I'm working on my own version as well. There's a lot of people really interested in this list and very fascinated by like all the stuff it can do. I was talking with some people even at Punt City about it. They were also very excited. I think it's like got the fact that there are like multiple one card win conditions with your commander if you trigger that last ability.
That is awesome. I hadn't thought about the like the the what is it, the
combo part about it.
I hadn't really thought about how it can copy like untap draw card spells. But yeah, no, that's really cool. I still don't know that I think it's the best card in the set, but like I see what you're saying, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And yes.
So clearly you think the next commander is the best card in the set.
Oh, 100%. The next card is the best card in the set. Next card, speaking of, is our old friend Bruce Tarl, Roving Rancher. It's a 4/3 human warrior that costs 2 generic, a red and a white. It says oxen you control have double strike. And whenever Bruce Tarl enters the battlefield or attacks, exile the top card of your library. If it's a land card, create a 2/2 white ox creature token. Otherwise, you may cast it until the end of your next turn. So this is like a thing that like red and white and some degree generally when they're together are starting to get is this like impulse draw sort of thing. Again, I'm going to be honest. I like Ty more than Bruce as a commander.
Yeah,
because I think like Ty just very straightforwardly does a thing, right? This is just kind of like generic value, right?
Yeah, it's Bruce Titan for sure. Like this is it's also an outlet, right? Which is why it's being brought up, right? Because you make infinite copies of it, whether through balancing it with Dockside, Cloudstone, and like all of that stuff, right? And you exile your entire deck, making an army of oxen, and also just you know drawing your whole deck the equivalent of, right? It's cute, right? Like the reason I'm bringing it up is because we have a CEDH playable Boros Bruce Tarl. And that is definitely going to be somebody's cup of tea
for sure.
And if we didn't talk about it, someone
I will say the fact that you can in its defense, right? The fact that you can, it's an ETB ability that makes it like an effectively a curio outlet, right? I think that is like a real thing to it. My only issue is I feel like Boros is in that weird spot where Boros is like, we want to play stacks pieces that like slow the game down. But then we're getting all of these commanders and ways to win that don't like that. And I think that is like the tension there. And I think that's why I like Ty more, because I think Ty plays with that tension more effectively. But I also like this. So
I like that specifically you can like go to combat with it, swing, proc its trigger, right? And then if you play like the A plus B's for Kiki combos, right? You can always be like, cool, go to combat or like do the thing. And then like I can flash in like Resto Angel, right?
Right.
And then like untap, exile a card that I can either cast or like, you know, have an oxen for beats.
I think that's really
good. The fair plan of it. Like I jokingly called it Bruce Titan, right? But like it is. It is that, right? Like it does have that beatdown plan pretty locked down. Cause like at some point it's like you're dumb 4/3 and a bunch of ox and you're like, all right guys, like buckle up. We're going to get the
beatdown. I like the Resto Felidar Kiki angle of this more. I think like, I think that angle feels like it just kind of plays to what this deck wants to be doing more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Like you can do Boros Tempo. You can still play a few Rule of Laws, especially at the very least Deafening Silence. Right.
Well, at least one that we're going to be talking about here soon. But
yes, that's true. That too. That, because it works so well with the combos. Right.
Like, yeah.
Which is so freaking sick. But yeah. No, I'm actually really about this as a commander. I think it's like silly. It's fun. It's one of those things where it's like, would I sleeve this up and bring it to a CEDH event? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to be an A tier deck? Absolutely not. It's going to be a fringe deck. But like, it's fun. It's cool. And it's a unique deck that can be brought to a CEDH table and not be like laughed out of the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For people who are watching, because I know people, I'm going to get comments about this because I get comments about when I'm just passively doing stuff generally, I know that I am stretching my neck a lot and rubbing my cheek a lot. And that is because I have a horrible cramp in the back of my neck. That
the worst.
It's like, it's so bad. I can feel it up the back of my head, like into my jaw. And it's just like, I slept horribly last night because of it. And it's just like all day, I've just been like trying to stretch my neck out and shit. So that is why if you see me over here, like moving my mouth weirdly randomly, it's because my jaw fucking hurts. but next card on our list is Ganti. Canny. Yeah. What does that mean?
To be canny?
Yeah.
Like corny, right?
Is it? Canny. Google. Canny. Having or showing shrewdness and or good judgment, especially in money or business matters.
Wow, I was so wrong. Oh, wow.
Okay. I needed to know that because it was like we're talking about this card. I'm like, I have no fucking idea what canny means. So Ganti, the shrewd businessman acquisitor, is
Ganti, good business guy.
it's a 5/5 Aetherborn rogue that costs 2 generic and soul tie. Says spells you don't own cost 1 generic less to cast. And whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, look at the top card of that player's library, then exile it face down. You may play that card for as long as it remains exiled, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that card. So this is an interesting card.
I love Steely Timna.
Steely Timna.
I just think it's cool. Like it's you know, it's the best mnemonic betrayal commander ever. It's, you know, the best Praetor's Grasp commander because they cost less, right? I don't know. It's cool. It's fun. It does like a really unique ability. You can play some like weird evasive creatures and then just be like, cool, every single turn I'm going to be taking this. You know, I mean, the same way that like there was those like functional Timna Thrasht decks that like, you know, were able to steal from your opponent's decks, right? But this is kind of nice because like your card advantage can acquire your pieces and your, you know, your card advantage with your commander can acquire stuff from your opponent's decks. Obviously, there's a bunch of payoff for taking things from your opponent's decks. There's definitely things that are like, oh, cool, this pays off when I cast things from exile. Obviously, you're a little weaker to Dranith, right? And when you exile cards, you exile them face down, right?
Yes.
Yeah, which is like really cool because like normally the big downside of like exiling stuff is that like
everybody knows what you have.
Right. You get visuals on it. Right. Which is cool that this one does not do that, which I really enjoy.
The frustrating thing about this is that webcam CDH is just kind of dying in general. But this is just not a viable webcam commander.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't even know how you would because you would have to literally like you'd have to block the other players. Put the card face down, have the player put their head down, reveal the card to the other players, have that put down, and then have them like,
this is why I talked about banning Praetor's Grasp in the MLC. I was like, there's no way to effectively resolve this card.
Yep. I agree. That's unfortunate, but luckily we are returning to the modern age of mostly playing in stores, right? Yep. So. That part's very nice.
But yeah, Ganti seems neat. I'm, you know, like fine. It seems cool. I think it's like makes opposition agent fucking nutty. But you know,
yeah.
It's a soul tie deck, and you can play this soul tie deck. and I think it will do a thing. Next card on our list is a card that Cobblepot's very excited about. This is Rakdos the Muscle. It is our old boy Rakdos. Demon Mercenary, who's a 6/5 that costs 2 generic, a black, and a red. It has flying and trample and says whenever you sacrifice another creature, exile cards equal to its mana value from the top of target player's library. Till your next end step, you may play those cards and mana of any type can be spent to cast those spells. It has a second ability that is sacrifice another creature. And Rakdos the Muscle gains indestructible until end of turn. Tap it, and you can only activate it once each turn.
I didn't even realize it says target player's library. That's so fascinating.
So the target player's library thing is actually what because originally I didn't notice that, but then I saw that and I was like, oh, that's actually kind of interesting because you can use your like sacrifice ability, right? As so like a
steal or whatever.
Exactly. Like respond to people's top deck tutors and things like that. That's kind of interesting. One of the other cool things that it does, I have a list here. I can share that Cobblepot sent was you get to take advantage of evoke creatures in a kind of hilarious way, because part of the evoke
like is that you sacrifice it.
Yeah, right? Is that you sacrifice it. So cards like Ingot Chewer suddenly become a one mana cantrip, right? That you destroy something and also get to get cards from it. There's some interesting things here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a cantrip. Ingot Chewer is one mana, destroy artifact, draw five.
Well, that's why I said, right? Is it's like you the one thing I will say about this is the only thing I really have against this deck is it's not playing Fury, and it's not like right. Like I think, or even Grief. Like I think that's my biggest downside.
Yeah, is that it's not more scammy?
Yeah, exactly. Well, because of the fact that. Fury ends up becoming five mana, draw five, destroy a bunch of shit, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That to me seems insane in this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. That's insane.
And like, this is one of the things about this card that I think is because at first I saw this and I was like, this is nothing.
Whatever.
Cobblepot talked about it a little bit more. And, you know, I love Cobble. Sometimes he's like smoking something. But also I like to play Arden. So who am I to judge? Right. but he showed me the list and like I started gold fishing it and I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is just so good. I actually think that this might come out as like a Rakdos deck. I think this has potential to be a real deck.
I'm super about that. I do love that. The specific things we were talking about in this conversation, like with the evoke and all that stuff, is like the stuff that's made me like it a lot more.
Yeah.
I always thought it was like kind of like pretty above rate and decent, but this is like,
the way like Grief, the fact
like
that
Shriek Maw is like, you know what I mean? Like,
Shriek Maw's dumb. I think like, so, like, and I think like even like, he's playing like Spike Bellows, right? Which is like a lower rate Fury. Like, I think you could still play that and Fury, right? Like, I think you just play all the evoke creatures that are reasonable.
Yeah.
I think there's a reasonable discussion to be saying that you should play Grief, right? Like, you strip a card from somebody's hand, draw three. Like, I see that as...
Draw four.
Yeah, draw four. Is it four?
Yeah.
Damn, I thought it was... that's nuts. And the fact that you could be doing that as early as turn one is buck wild, baby.
Yeah. I mean, even like, there's like the Inner Flame Acolyte, which is like bad, but it costs one to evoke it. Right. And like the awful snout.
If you want to see a Brewer's Choice episode of this, we'll see if we can brew this up and get Cobblepot on.
Yeah.
And talk about
this. I feel like that will be one of those Brewer's Choice episodes where we're like, all right, well, we have 80 cards that are the same. Here's where it gets interesting. You know what I mean?
Well, that's most CDH decks, right? Most CDH cards share most of their cards.
I
was initially like, I don't know about this one. And then like the more I looked at it, the more I was like, wait a second, there's last week, right? Yeah. Like, I don't generally like to play Rakdos. But the thing that I like about this is like it does have like you joked about this earlier, but it is kind of a scam deck, right? Like I think this is like it's not obviously a one for one, but it definitely feels a lot like scam does in modern as far as like evoking that feeling. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I was not initially planning on building it, but then I looked at it and my brain processed all of the information, was like, The interaction with the evoke creatures in Mayhem Devil also is like choice.
But it's good because that just gives you like combo outlets in the deck.
Exactly. Too, right? You're also running Pitiless Plunder, which I gotta say,
they
reprinted that in the Pirates pre-con.
Yeah.
Thank you, Wizards.
the corpse stance combos then become draw your deck too, right? Yep. Because we're actually, you can just exile your opponent's entire decks, which is even easier, right? Because if there's a single Thoracle player, you can just like exile through a majority of your
deck. Does this also not exile your opponent's decks with like World Gorger Dragon and Animate Dead?
Maybe. How did you get a little thumbs up bubble to pop up next to you?
I have no fucking idea. That happens in Riverside sometimes.
You saw that, right?
Like, I saw that. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I've seen it happen in previous weeks.
It's like, I have smoked and drank not at all today.
No. You are not hallucinating. That is... I also was like, what the fuck? But yeah, no, like, I believe this also just exiles decks with World Gorger Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Because you get one sacrifice, right?
Yeah, because it sacrifices it when it dies. And then
you just need your commander already out, which is like
you kind do of need your commander out. That is the downs. But that's also kind of the conceit of this deck anyway, right? Is
the
deck kind of needs to have its commander. And I think that is like the downside. But like Obnixilus already kind of works in that territory anyway, where the deck doesn't really work without its commander.
Well, what's nice about the corpse stance combo is that you can pause it to play Ob and then like have it come back.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Sorry, not corpse stance. Yeah, no corpse stance. It's the reanimate with buyback, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're not on crack. It's, as far as I'm aware.
Talk about cards that don't exist.
but yeah, no, I think this is super cool. Cobble, big thank you for pointing this card out and like selling me on this because we talked about this last week. I have a brand of what I like to play in Magic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that means that I look at specific things and my brain just kind of goes, that's not for me. And then I don't explore it. And then, but this I think is like, oh, I get to do the like Cop of Rakdos, which is like my bullshit.
Cop of Rakdos. Why I hate that so much.
Next card. This is our last commander on the list. This is Roxanne. Starfall Savant. It is a 4/3 cat druid that costs 3 generic, a red and a green. And it says whenever Roxanne enters the battlefield or attacks, create a tapped colorless artifact token named Meteorite. With enters the battlefield and deals 2 damage to any target and add 1 mana of any color. Whenever you tap an artifact token for mana, add 1 mana of any type that artifact token produced. So this is a food chain outlet.
Food chain outlet, Sabretooth outlet. The reason I like this card, and they templated it the same way as Bruce Tarl, is the fact that it has the Titan status, right? So ETB or attack, it does this thing. And what I really appreciate is like people compare this a lot to Kinnan, right? Which is like very clearly a lot worse than Kinnan, right? But what it does do is like, first of all, it has Dockside, right? Like, so I've always literally joked that Kinnan's the best Dockside deck. So it's nice to think like we have like an actual
Kinnan
deck.
Kinnan Dockside.
And then the other thing is like, first of all, the Sabretooth lines then become like so tight with this thing out, right? Because you can literally execute it for 3 treasures, right? Mm-hmm. The Cloudstone lines, you can execute for as little as 2 treasures, right? so like that part's pretty hot, right? And then the other really cool part about this is like, this is the most, it's an anti-Kinnan clone because it specifically ETBs and shoots things for 2. Which I think is very funny. for the Sisseys and the Kinnans and decks like that that are very creature focused, it's a very anti-creature deck, which I actually think is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
So like being able to flicker your commander or being able to like get multiple combats or like, I don't even know if that's necessarily the thing, right? But like also the Meteorite then untaps the next turn and like is 2 mana per Meteorite. It feeds Dockside a lot, right? But like, it's, I don't know, I think it's fascinating. I think it does some like really cool stuff. I think it's like a really weird anti-meta pick, right? So like
honestly, I feel like what is it, Gruul has been getting like a lot of just
cool
truly tools, viable commanders, like
which is really nice.
Like I no longer look at Gruul and go, oh, that's not that good. Like I actually like between Atali, this I mean, like even Minskin Boo, I look at it and I'm like, wow, like Gruul is really had a glow up over the past two years.
Right, like Minsk and Boo was like, oh my God, Gruul's never gotten a tool like this ever, right? Like people were like, it was Thar or bust basically, right? For a really long time. And now we kind of have multiple pieces that are operating within that same vein, except for the two we've got most recently are like Food Chain Outlets that also do their own thing. You know what I mean? Like Atali is very much like the non-deterministic turbo storm kind of thing, whereas this one's a lot more like grindy, anti-creature, like that kind of stuff, you know, which is like sick.
I think this is like all really that Gruul is opening up like that. I think that's really
Neat. It's getting its own identity too, which is really kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
In CEDH, I should say. It's always had its own identity, right?
But yeah, like, I think like the way it's been like put, like structured in the direction it's gone to, honestly, like even Boros has started to take on more of an identity recently. And like, I think like even, or honestly, really all of the color pairings have started to really have clear identities that I don't feel like they've had in the past.
Yeah.
Where it's just everything is very clearly doing a particular thing.
Yeah.
But with that being said, this is the end of the Commander. I'm just going to say episode. We might split this into two, maybe. I need to go to the restroom. And so with that, Ian, why don't you tell people where they can find you for this episode?
Wow, what a handoff. All right, thanks, Cal. Yeah, if you enjoy my commentary and comments here on the Mind Sculptors, you can find me over at youtube.com/comedianmtg, which is my other channel. Find me at that place. I also do CEDH coaching as my full-time thing. So if you're interested in taking that next step up with your coaching, with your CEDH play, whether it be you are going to your first local tournament, you're trying to get the skills of the format underneath you without a lot of time to do so, or if you're trying to like really get into that, you know, grind set as they call it, feel free to find me. You can find me at comedianmtg@gmail.com. Any of those places, Cal is lovely and leaves in the description below. Twwitter or Discord, comedian_mtg on Discord, @comedianmtg on Twitter. Find me in those places, hit me up. I'm super flexible. I've literally started my like, I've a several paragraph long description of like options for people. And I'm like, folks have been, you know, curious about like changing things up and doing things certain ways, and I'm super flexible to all that stuff. Just like the whole point is I want you to be able to use my resources to get yourself to be taking that next step, right? So whatever you need for that coaching, I'm kind of here to help you all out. So
yeah, Ian is a great coach, also just a great human being. So if you want coaching from A-plus human being, well, maybe not A-plus. I think like A-plus is like Gandhi, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think you're more like a solid B, right?
Yeah. wow. But,
well, you really, I'm stealing a stand-up bit, Ian's like one of the best people in the community. So it's just, if you want great coaching from a great person, hit up Ian, and always glad to get to work with him. But with that, that is the end of our Commander portion of the set review. We'll be back next week with the rest of the cards here on the Mind Sculptors. See everybody.
Kyle's gonna do a pee-pee.